If you're like most Americans, chances are you rent a self-storage unit. Well, they're not just for storing your stuff anymore, believe it or not. Today, we're going to talk to you about the investment opportunities in the rapidly growing self-storage sector with today's special guest coming up on this edition of Your Money Manual with Vince Anima. And now here's the host of Your Money Manual, the CEO of Wealth Strategies Advisory Group and creator of the Household Endowment Model, Vince Anima.
Welcome to Your Money Manual, the educational show that we design around the fact that when it comes to investing, our guess is your money didn't come with a set of instructions. So our goal is to provide you with some valuable information from industry experts to help you with some of those investment decisions. Today's show is not an endorsement or recommendation of a specific investment, but more of an overview of the self-storage industry, what it is, and what some of the trends are to look for. And for that industry insight, we have a special guest, Mr. Bill Leitner III, a Southern gentleman, and you'll know what I'm talking about immediately after you hear him, his accent, and his manners. You'll know he's from the South. He has 24 years' experience in developing commercial real estate projects. He is the managing principal of Lightbox Portfolio Partners and Merchants Retail Partners, which is a development platform owned by the management of Merchant Retail and Protective Life Insurance Corp, a 110-year-old life insurance company valued at approximately $71 billion, that's with a B, dollars. So I've spent some pretty valuable time with Bill interviewing him, getting an understanding of this unique real estate sector. I look at him as being one of our experts to go to. I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing from him. I know I was quite impressed with listening to him in our time together, and I thought he'd be a great guest for you listeners out there in your education in the alternative investment world. So on today's show, we want to highlight the self-storage industry. You know, those remote garages many of us use to store all the stuff we don't have room for at home or in our offices. Not only are they a place to store stuff, but it also turns out potentially a great place to store a portion of our investable assets. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vince, for having me.
When did self-storage start to gain traction as a preferred investment opportunity, and what makes it so attractive within the larger commercial real estate space? And part two to the question, would you give us an overview of the self-storage industry, where it has come from, what some of the trends are, and why the new urban self-storage may be an attractive alternative type of an investment?
Well, sure, Vince. Self-storage has been around for quite some time. It was known originally as kind of a what we call a covered land play. Well, people would just put self-storage on an existing piece of property that they maybe held for a long, long time and was trying to find some way to generate income off of it. And that's why oftentimes you would see self-storage deployed and more remote type locations, or maybe out by the airport and things of that nature. But over time, self-storage has been identified, I think, by many of the better in breed asset managers and investment managers out there in this space as a solid property type with good recurring cash flow and a property type that is not overly expensive to operate. The reason why I think self-storage has been not recognized maybe as the major food groups of office, retail, and multifamily is that the space overall continues to be owned by more mom-and-pop type operators. Believe it or not, about 65% of the industry, you know, is still owned by mom-and-pop operators that are often owner-operated and situations where maybe a husband and wife own two or three facilities, you know, within an existing market or location. But recently, if you were to look at the institutional players that have entered the space or that have been in there for quite some time, like some of the publicly traded REITs and other large investment managers, certainly recognizable names in all real estate sectors, they have done quite well. And so with that, you know, we're kind of bullish on it. We like not only the fact that we think that we can possibly own and operate a little more efficiently than some of the mom and pop operators, Well, we feel like there's an opportunity for development in the self storage sector as we're seeing really easy to understand demographic changes occurring within our nation. We think of self storage as an asset class that is subject to what we call live life. And on the live side, that is a driver of self storage. It's kind of this urbanization movement that we're seeing happen all across the United States, where we are no longer running out to the suburbs, but we're seeing actually an entrenchment of folks moving back downtown. And with that, we're seeing exponential apartment growth. Well, we feel like storage is a wonderful kind of follow-on asset to apartment growth. And as such, we think that this urbanization movement will continue to drive a need for storage as people downsize, as people move into to more apartments. The life side of live life is really that storage is triggered by life events that happen for all of us. You know, obviously very easy to understand, but each time you have a child going to college or a job relocation or a military deployment or a parent going to congregate care, whatever it might be, each time one of those life events happens, it triggers a need for storage. And so for us, we feel like, you know, those aren't changing anytime soon. And we feel like America is on the move a good bit more than it has been in the past. The mobility of America certainly has kicked in, coupled with the downsizing movement within America right now. We feel like storage will therefore continue to grow.
Wow. Well, that was a lot of good information. My next question was about stability. So how stable is self-storage compared to the other commercial real estate food groups, such as office, retail, multifamily? And how has this real estate sector performed historically versus these other food groups in the real estate world?
You know, Vince, I think that probably the appraisal groups and a lot of the large brokerage groups have really nailed it when they have looked at, you know, the 10 and 15 year run rates of self-storage compared to office, retail, and multifamily, and how it's fared over that time. And I think there's certain components to how a self-storage property operates that really drive its long-term performance dynamics. The first is that it's just a really low capital expenditure type of commercial real estate. So, for example, in retail, right, over a period of 8.5 to 10 years, you have to do a lot of updating on your HVAC units, maybe, and your roofing system, and restriping your parking lot and your landscaping package and things of that nature. You know, in self-storage, especially the ones where we like to focus on, that is typically a 90,000 square foot, three-story building, there is not a whole lot of capital expenditure that we have to outlay for the property over the ownership period. If you think about it, you know, in year 8.5 to 10 or so, maybe the capital expenditures that we're focusing on may be some level of resealing the concrete floors and possibly doing some updating of painting some of the door systems on the inside. But for the most part, it's a really low capital expenditure outlay. And with that, if you're an investor or an owner, that risk of capital call or that risk of further equity investment in order to keep your physical plant updated is not typically in the minds of many of the appraisers and the brokerage shops. It's not as heavy in material in the self-storage sector as it is in some of the others.
So basically, to own and operate a self-storage is going to be a much lower expense overall to maintain it compared to a lot of the other food groups. I got that message.
Yeah, I agree, Vince. Just one little anecdotal comment I can make is that probably one that resonates better with maybe your audience out there is apartments as it's compared to self-storage. You know, if we owned apartments together, each time we have a tenant that moves out, right, we have to, what they call, make ready that space. And it often involves patching the drywall, repainting the space, and pulling up the carpet maybe. And so it's, you know, that expenditure historically, if you were to ask the appraisers or the large brokerage shops, they would tell you that's anywhere from $250 to maybe $600 per unit, right? If we have a tenant that leaves in the self-storage space, all we have to do is broom sweep the inside. And that's basically it. So it's just from a tenant turnover standpoint, it's much, much less expensive.
And something tells me that the tenant turnover in self-storage is quite a bit lower than in multifamily. It seems like people come and go in multifamily, but I know I've still got the same storage unit I got 15 years ago. All I've done is reduced it in size a little bit, but in the same location, same place. They take the money out of my account every month. It's been on a pretty regular basis. So we haven't moved out.
You know, it varies market by market. We like to set up most of our tenants, our renters on, auto debit. And as such, many folks are what we call a sticky customer that like having that facility to store their extra goods, their heirlooms, their family belongings. And just because it's somewhat painful to have to repack the truck, so to speak, and move it somewhere else, you often find that customer wants to stay longer than they originally anticipated.
True story. So what are the major differences with your strategy and the other self-storage facilities our listeners may be using or seeing in their own neighborhoods or downtown areas?
I think our philosophy is a lot driven by kind of our 25-year track record in the retail sector. You know, we have historically worked for some of the larger brand names that do a lot of analysis based on spatial separation and void analysis and traffic counts and view quarters. At the end of the day, we're trying to build a retail store in the most convenient, efficient location we possibly can. And we have that same mentality in the storage sector as well. So our site selection process is very similar for our storage deployments as it is for our grocery store deployments. There's also something else that we do. It's also, I think, harkens back to our experience in retail, is that we will often integrate a mixed-use component into the self-storage facility, which simply just means most of the time bringing forth maybe a small one, two, or three retailers in the bottom floor, or either maybe open-air office space in the bottom floor, that because these buildings we're building really almost look like a downtown urban apartment complex or possibly a downtown office building, by incorporating that retailer office into the ground-level floor, the building in itself starts to look like a true mixed-use project. And with that, we think it bodes well or positions us to be able to get self-storage approved by the various city councils and municipalities that are out there that have very high barrier to entry, but would maybe be more welcoming to a self-storage opportunity because of the ability to integrate mixed use into the overall physical plant.
Can you give us an example of some of the retail tenants that you would have or have had or do currently have on that first floor?
You bet. So that's where we are in the retail sector right now is, you know, we have certain categories that, you know, that we believe long term are going to be what I'd call relevant long term, or we like to use the term sustained relevance. And so we bring that same philosophy to any mixed use facility that we would do. And that really centers around health, wellness, and beauty and fitness. Right. So that's kind of one bucket, if you will. And the other is kind of food restaurants. So that's the coffee shop, the Starbucks of the world. And then the last is what I call commercial services. So that would be the lawyer or the title company or the insurance salesman. But all those set up really nice for self-storage. A lot of it has a lot to do with because retailers don't like to fight for parking, right? They always want you to have a very convenient parking field out in front of your retail operation, right? You want to be able to pull up to that front curb and walk right in, certainly if it's a Starbucks or maybe a spa or Pilates studio. Well, what's nice is that in the self-storage sector, you are not generating very many traffic counts. You'll maybe generate, industry standards would tell you, 6 to 12 customers a day. So as such, if you're that retailer, you're very rarely, if ever, trying to fight for parking. You've got a very convenient, very open parking field typically, and that customer gets to pull right up to the space.
You guys have it down to a science. So as you know, we recommend an endowment style investment approach. We've talked a lot about the household endowment model to our clients for their portfolios, a mixture of both private investments, public alternative type investments. In terms of where we stand right now with the market seemingly in extra innings, what is your message to investors out there who may be looking at private investments, want to mitigate some of that public exposure in the stock market, and specifically alternative investments in the developmental self-storage sector?
You know, anytime, no matter really where we are in an economic cycle, commercial real estate has historically been a great place to be, but it's only as long as commercial real estate is a liquid asset. And so for us, liquidity and investor demand is something that we think is really important right now with where we are in the cycle. And liquidity means, in a humble opinion, how able you are to dispose of your asset at a profit. You know, how many people show up on call for offers day? And right now, at least from what the national and regional brokerage firms are indicating in all of their information, is that self-storage is a sector that is showing a good bit of investor demand from all different types of investor flavorings, from the institutional all the way down to the high net worth. So right now, the thought about liquidity, meaning how quickly can I exit and how easy can I exit, it certainly seems as if self-storage is an asset class that is getting its fair share of looks from the investment community, which adds to its overall liquidity, no matter where we might be in the economic cycle. So the part that I think as an investor in commercial real estate that you just always want to be cognizant of, is it a good investment in the good times and a good investment in the bad times? And while I certainly can't speak specifically to this, nor am I acting like that this is reflective of every deal we've done, but during the Great Recession, according to some of the more industry information that's out there, self-storage performed really well compared to the other asset classes. And I think that has a lot to do, Vince, with the fact that, once again, it's not very capital intensive to operate, and it's more of a cash flow generator than a lot of the other asset classes that are out there.
Well, I guess you could say it sounds like a profitable business, which, by the way, Bill, I recently heard where Mr. Wayne Hughes, you know who Wayne Hughes is, he's the founder of Public Storage, a multi-billion dollar public company known by most everybody out there as the self-storage guys with those pretty orange doors. He's a lover of thoroughbred horse racing, has 9 Kentucky Derby champions, 2 of them are Triple Crown winners, and they're standing stud at his spendthrift farm. So I guess the self-storage business has been a profitable one for the Hughes family in Public Storage. Would you agree?
It certainly sounds like it. It's been very good to him, and nothing but kudos for him and that company.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, I guess we've run out of time. So I would like to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Again, we were speaking with Mr. Bill Leitner, who is a principal with Lightbox Portfolio Partners and Merchants Retail Partners. I think he gave us a lot of really valuable information.
Thank you, Vince, and thank you for having me.
For more information on how alternative investments may be able to help your portfolio withstand the shocks from market volatility, click over to the householdendowmentmodel.com, where you can sign up for our white papers or give us a call at Wealth Strategies Advisory Group. And that number is 888-635-9724. And you can request any additional information or meeting to discuss your needs, telephone conference, whether you're interested in alternative investments like commercial real estate or any of the various wealth management services we provide. If you're listening to our program on Star Worldwide Network, simply click the button labeled website there on the left sidebar to go directly to the listener page that exists just for you. And for my special guest, Bill Leitner, I'm Vince Anibal. Thanks very much for listening. We'll talk to you again on the next edition of Your Money Manual.
As always, we hope you enjoyed this edition of Your Money Manual with Vince Anibal. Be sure to connect with us and follow us at Wealth Strategies Advisory Group and the Household Endowment Model on Facebook and LinkedIn. In addition to the Wealth Strategies Advisory Group website, Your Money Manual is part of the Star Worldwide Networks and is also available on iTunes, that's Apple Podcasts now, Google Play, Spotify, and other podcast channels. So tell your friends to look for us wherever they get their podcasts. We'll see you next time.